Good evening. This is the September 9th meeting of the subcommittee of the Pacifica National Board Elections Committee Campaign Finance Reform Subcommittee. And we are meeting at teleconference beginning at 8:14 p.m. on Sunday the 9th. We need someone to take notes since we don't have a secretary. This is Carolyn Burden. Perhaps everyone on the call could identify themselves and their station, and then if someone would be good enough to volunteer to take notes, I would really appreciate that. We do need a secretary.
Terry will volunteer today.
Thank you, Terry.
Should we go east to west, west to east, north to south, or south to north?
As you wish.
Well, I've already started, so Terry Goodman from KPFK is on the call.
Thank you.
Henry Knorr from KPFA.
Bob
Carol
Letterer.
Burden from WBAI.
And Bob Letterer from WBAI.
Also on the call.
Casey Peters, National Election Supervisor.
All right, thank you. Now, the only item on the agenda tonight that I can recall, since we didn't have minutes from the last meeting, is the proposal, two proposals actually, for campaign finance pledges by both Casey Peters and Henry Knorr to essentially address the question of how much money candidates should or can or would spend on their individual campaigns. And we have two separate proposals, and Bob Letterer has a substitute proposal. Perhaps we should read the original two first and then go on from there. Henry, do you want to read your proposal and then Casey yours, and then we'll ask for...
Give me a minute to call it up. Mm-hmm. Casey's ready. Why don't you go ahead, Casey?
Okay, hold on a second.
I'm both.
I have to get to it. I'm sorry.
All right, I've got mine. You want to go?
Right.
Okay. I should go? I'll go. This is Henry. Mine reads, and I didn't particularly intend it as a substantive alternative to Casey's. It's just a somewhat different phrasing and so on. But anyway, mine reads, as a candidate for a listener sponsor delegate seat on the local station board, I hereby pledge to limit my spending on the election campaign to $100, either from my own funds or from funds donated by others, and to urge my supporters not to spend additional funds to promote my candidacy, either individually or as part of a slate. I make this pledge because I believe that all candidates should have an equal opportunity to present their case to their fellow listener sponsors, regardless of their personal economic circumstances or their access to others with money. As every observer of American government knows, rules that permit large-scale private spending on campaigns turn politics into a pay-to-play game, a system I believe is inconsistent with the Pacifica mission. Instead of spending heavily on my campaign, I will rely on in-person campaigning and the opportunities Pacifica provides to all candidates to reach the voters, which include at least 10 broadcasts of a 50-second recorded announcement, appearance on two on-air candidate forums, a 500-word written statement posted online and printed in the election pamphlet distributed to all voters, and access to official web pages to provide additional details regarding my qualifications and goals for a local station board. I authorize the Pacifica Foundation's election supervisors to indicate on the ballot that I have signed this pledge to limit campaign spending.
All right, thank you. And Casey?
Okay. I just have in front of me what... what you had on your latest email, Carolyn. So
I can read it for you if you prefer, or you can summarize.
Well, it's similar to Henry's, I believe. I mean, I wrote mine first, and then he added some stuff, and as a candidate for a listener-sponsored delegate seat of the local station board, I hereby renounce the use of private campaign expenditures beyond $100, either of my own funds or of money and services contributed by others. I recognize that communication opportunities provided by Pacifica allow me to reach each voter with a 500-word written statement, at least 10 broadcasts of a 50-second recorded announcement, appearance on two on-air candidate forums, and sufficient access to official web pages to provide detailed information to Pacifica voters regarding my campaign for local station board. And then there's a dot, dot, dot. I'm not sure what comes after that, to tell you the truth.
Oh, I acknowledge that the influence of private funding. Do you have that statement?
I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry.
All right, may I? I acknowledge that the influence of private funding would be an inappropriate contradiction to the non-commercial nature of our network. Therefore, I pledge to participate in this campaign as a public funding candidate who will not accept private funds or services as I seek a seat on my local station board. I authorize Pacifica Foundation's election supervisors to indicate this status on the ballot. And those are the two pledges, which are two contradictory motions. So perhaps we can open that for discussion.
Terry?
Well, let me preface by saying that we probably ought to go through some of the comments that you forwarded to us from listeners, mostly about enforcement, in case there's anything we put into these statements or an additional motion that could allow enforcement, because these are easy to get around. But with respect to the specific proposal for us, I prefer Henry's, but there is an element of Casey's that I would like to modify Henry's with. In paragraph 2 of Mr. Noor's statement, he says, "A system I believe is inconsistent with the Pacifica mission." And while in most cases I applaud references to the Pacifica mission, in a case where it can just created unnecessary debate about what's in the mission, I would prefer that say a system I believe is inconsistent with the non-commercial nature of Pacifica Broadcasting or something like that, like what Casey said, rather than say that the mission says that you can't spend money on campaigns. We'll say that we're non-commercial, and so that implies that money should not be influencing our decisions. So, let's see, let me try to get the exact wording for the proposal. A system I believe is inconsistent with the is contradictory to the non-commercial nature of our network. The non-commercial nature of our network. That's closer to what Casey said. System, I believe, is contradictory to the non-commercial nature of our network.
Okay. So you're proposing that as an amendment to the first to Henry Moore's statement.
Yeah.
Are there any other amendments to that, or maybe?
A system that I believe is contradictory to the non-commercial nature of our network.
All right. And for the benefit of our listeners, perhaps I should read. We had four statements from members about this. Hello, has somebody just joined the call?
Serene's on.
I'm sorry?
Serene is on.
Serene. All right. Hello, Serene. We're just going through the statements, the two proposals for the candidate pledges. The statements are varied, and really they address some of the holes in the proposal. The first statement, if I may summarize, says that the biggest loophole is that it does not quantify in monetary terms the value of the on-air exposure that the Justice and Unity Coalition give to their candidates. Obviously, this applies to WBAI. All year long, and the negative impact their race baiting has on opposition candidates. A second comment says that, as this seems clearly to specifically...
Well, I'll make a point of order that that particular comment is a violation of decorum, I think.
Yes, I'm simply repeating it as it came
right
through, perhaps it is.
Just noting it for the record.
Thank you. Another
question, please.
Pardon?
As a point of information?
Yes.
The comments that are being read, they come from where?
They come from listener members and staff members at WBAI.
This is from your private list?
No, from various lists that I shared this with.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you're saying you publicly distributed the proposals to the entire Pacifica community, and the only comments you got were those that were taking hits at Justice and Unity?
I posted them to several lists, not all of them public. And the comments that I got were the three or four that I'm going through now.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to me to be either fair or a very good use of our time.
Well, Terry suggested that we go through the comments. And,
yeah,
and
may I revise my suggestion?
Please.
Yeah, scan those for useful suggestions about enforcement that don't mention any slates. we don't want a partisan discussion, but we want to try to make this a useful proposal from the committee.
All right, I'll see what I can do. You have them before you,
yeah,
and you can monitor my scanning. Thank you.
Well, I'll try to find copies, yeah.
All right. The second point was that this specifically excludes the possibility of postage and cost for mailing lists, and that question should be addressed directly. I'm not sure exactly what that means. The 500-word written statement, the 10 broadcasts, the 50-second recorded announcement, the appearance on 2 on-air candidate forms, sufficient access to official web pages to provide detailed information to Pacifica voters, this commentator says, are not sufficient for clearly informing the listeners to a radio station of either the issues, parentheses, history, context, vision, disagreements, implications, ramifications, close paren, or a candidate's position. Members should not be expected to resort to another medium to understand what is going on at their public communications medium, nor do they understand the issues, I think it means, via the above. Another comment is that the 50-second allowance, 3-minute allowance, followed by questions on a forum, gives about no time for anyone to understand what is going on and how to vote as a result. And the 500-word position papers proposed do not compare to the challenge of discussion or grappling with listener questions. The next comment is that until there's sufficient airtime guaranteed for genuine elections discussion, preferably during the marathon period when programming is elastic. That is not enough, evidently. People, candidates have no recourse but to approach the electorate by mail. The idea, I think, there is that the on-air time being proposed in these two pledges is not enough to compensate for the lack of other information.
Terry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The comment about no specific mention of mailing lists, I think we could incorporate into the statement something like that. I will not attempt to purchase the Pacifica mailing list or something like that. The thing about forums and discussions not being enough is could be a different agenda item. I mean, if there was a whole lot more broadcasting regarding elections, then that would be an equalizing factor. And so it does relate to campaign finance reform and related to the committee, but it's not the item directly before us. I don't think we can, in a statement, change what broadcast availability there will be.
Well, yes, I think that was one of the problems, that we can't guarantee this broadcast time that's being offered as an alternative.
That separately, the committee could recommend.
It could recommend, yes.
Probably won't happen this election, though.
That's the issue, yes. That's the issue.
Well, I could say one thing in that regard, that as we do have another means of communication that I intend to make available this year, and that is to allow the candidates to have blogs on the Pacifica website.
Mm-hmm. I think the problem with that's implied in some of these responses is that this is a radio station, and to require people who want information to go to another medium is not only contradictory to our mission, but it's counterproductive in the long run. And I think that was one of the arguments that was posted.
Well, are they treating direct mail as a different medium then?
Well, that can reach everyone. And the idea is that by direct mail you can reach all the members who are voters, but
it's
not
medium.
It's a medium, but it will reach everyone, whereas the blogs will not reach everyone, because many people who are on the radio and receive United States Postal Service are not in fact on the internet. And given our membership, I think that's a real consideration. So those were some of the arguments against that. Also, we have no idea of... We had logs last year, and we had forums, and we have no feedback on, as Brian, one listener pointed out, we have no feedback on how many people they actually reached or how many people posted. I think in general, though, we just have to assume that the only media for reaching everybody is potentially on the air and actually by mail.
Terry?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a... We didn't deal with my earlier amendment, and we're kind of constrained because we have two motions before us, which is against the rules of order. So I think we should pick one of the drafts to work with and then entertain amendments to the draft. And because I have another amendment to one.
I'm fine with using Henry's draft if you prefer that.
Is there objection to Casey withdrawing his?
All right, hearing none, then let us proceed as Terry suggests with Henry's draft and amendment to that, which will incorporate whatever we think necessary.
Okay, I already offered one, and I'm ready with another.
I want to offer a substitute when it's appropriate.
This is Henry.
Henry?
May I say, maybe we suggest suspending the rules or something, and maybe hearing Bob's proposal and any other sort of beating around the substantive ideas for a little bit before we get down to amending any one specific draft?
That's all right with me. Are there any objections to suspending that and going into a committee of the whole, I guess it would be called? No, all right. Hearing none, then, maybe that's a good suggestion. Let's go ahead. Did you have something you wanted to say?
Yes, thank you. Okay, well, I certainly appreciate the spirit in which Casey and Henry's proposal has been made, and it's definitely... grasping and grappling with the problem we're facing of the really destructive impact of large amounts of money in creating imbalances in access to the voters. And so that's a good thing. Unfortunately, I just don't think that this method of addressing it is actually going to achieve the desired effect because of the fact that it's not mandatory. In other words, if everyone can't be required in some way to refrain from spending large amounts of money to print and mail material and send it out, then a lot of candidates will understandably be unwilling to essentially disarm themselves from the option of responding to some other candidate or what's often happened is a group of candidates who will gather together to spend money on a mailing. And then, you know, because they don't sign the pledge, then they are free to send the mailing. And you have that imbalance all over again. So, and yet actually the voters are kind of deceived into thinking, oh, these people are not in favor of taking the money out of the campaign, when really these candidates are just trying to keep a level playing field, but you can't do it unless everyone does it. So I don't think a voluntary pledge works for the goal of trying to reduce the negative effects of money. So instead, what I'm proposing is that we recommend to the PNB that they actually determine that under the bylaws language, which I can read so that everyone has it handy, it is permissible, and California law has similar language. The section about the right to members' access to the mailing list, it says, where the foundation provides a reasonable alternative to achieve the member's articulated purpose, the foundation may deny the member access to its membership list and information, unquote. And to me, the reasonable alternative is the 500-word statements that are in the booklet that's mailed to every single voter, that everyone has exactly equal access to make their persuasive case to the voters. Every single delegate or candidate for delegate has absolutely equal access to go on the air during a set of candidate debates, also community debates the station officially sponsors, and also the on-air carts that are supposed to be equal. And now we have this year, Casey is adding access to a blog. So to me, those are more than adequate. And certainly we can debate, you know, are the quantity of minutes given to on-air debate adequate? And we can, you know, recommend that be increased. That's not a problem. But I think that's a separate issue than, in general, is there fair and equal access to the voters to persuade them already provided? And I think there is. And then we can say that that's the reasonable alternative, and there's no need to start injecting these large sums of money by only those people who have access to it. So I don't know if I've been clear, but that's my proposal, would be to deny the use of the mailing list for the promotion of a candidacy for a delegate.
Terry,
go ahead.
I think Bob's proposal is in order. I think it's illegal, but I think we'd need a legal opinion to say that. You know, my articulated purpose as a candidate might be to send to the all the members of the foundation my 2,000-word candidate statement, and then it gets to be the question of, is 2,000 words reasonable if 500 words has been offered by the foundation in substitute. And it's not clear in statutory law that which way that decision would go. I believe the case law would require us to make our membership list available, but we need an attorney to tell us that, because nobody's going to take my word for it. There has been particular cases in California where I think the Auto Club and the Sierra Club, well-funded challenges to directors, got access to the mailing list in order to send stuff out. And there may be guidance within those court decisions that would show how Pacifica could legally restrain access to the list. So we need not just an opinion, but a researched opinion from counsel.
Anyone else to speak on this?
Henry, please.
Henry, please.
I certainly share Bob's concerns about the ineffectiveness of the pledge. I hadn't formulated it specifically from the point of view of the candidate who wants to sign it but needs to compete with the people with money, but that fits in with everything I've seen and what I believe. So, you know, I appreciate the spirit of the thing. Where I was coming from was that I thought the conclusion of our previous discussion was that, in fact, it wasn't, that it wouldn't be legal to deny access to the mailing list. And maybe we accepted that too quickly last time and we do need to research it, but I have a concern about denying access because it raises, I believe, I don't really know the legislative history in the drafting of the bylaws, but my understanding is that that some people insisted on this access to the bylaw, to the mailing list, precisely to deal with a situation such as we had in 1999, in the eyes of a substantial percentage of the listenership, the people controlling the air basically were hijacking the network, and that that mailings were essential to reaching out and mobilizing other listeners to try to correct that situation. Of course, now, you know, the internet has come a long way since 1999 and a lot more people have access, but still there are, as we all know, there are many who don't, and there are many who get so many emails that they're lost in the shuffle, and for some people, paper mailing is actually more effective. So I, and I believe many other people who are troubled about spending in the context of an ordinary campaign would nevertheless be troubled about denying access to the mailing lists because that would close off an important kind of emergency safety valve in a different kind of situation.
Is Bob?
Bob, yes, and then I'll put myself on the stack. Go ahead, Bob.
I'll go after you. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. Go ahead, please.
Okay, well, just to respond to Henry, that's a very legitimate concern, and I'm trying to play around with some language to make sure that the scenario you're describing, which you're right, was one of the motivating factors in rewriting the bylaws, and by the way, the language of the bylaws is very close to the general California corporate statute that, you know, mandates access to the mailing list for members, with this very important exception that I read about a reasonable alternative for the articulated purpose. So the way to handle that, I think, is just to make it narrow. The restriction on access is a narrow restriction if it's for the purpose of promoting the election of a delegate, because there's a reasonable alternative already prescribed in terms of the booklet with the 500-word statements and all the stuff I said before, the on-air, blah, blah, blah. If, however, you want to write a letter to the members saying, you know, I am outraged that the board voted to whatever, right, to meet, you know, only once a year, and I think this is a travesty and should be opposed, fine. Then they could get the mailing list for that purpose. This is only for the purpose of an election where there's already a mechanism for fair and equal access of every candidate to the listeners via mail and on the air. That's already been covered, so there's no need to give people the right to use the mailing list to kind of gild the lily and give, like, the extra push for their candidate. But if it's for some other purpose about a policy issue, that's a whole different problem or a whole different situation, and that would not be restricted.
Okay. I had some thoughts on this, if I may. One is that the access to the air is not equal now, and it's heavily weighted in terms of people who actually are on the air now, the staff. And, in fact, as we have found out in WBAI, there are some questionable uses of the airtime to attack individuals, which really are election issues disguised as such. And we're waiting for a ruling, I think, Casey, on some of those. but this happened last time too. And there is an unequal access to the air. So people who are on the air have access to the air and control the air really do not allow equal access to others, no matter how many minutes are scripted in terms of a forum or something of that sort. The other problem is that we really don't have control over some of the lists which would be prescribed by this motion are actually already out there. There are people who have access to some of these lists illegally, and last year we had teleconference. We were telemarketed twice last year during the election by people who had access to a telephone list, and we're not sure how that was generated. But we do have a problem in that there are whole lists or portions of the list that are already in people's hands, and there's no way to compensate for that with airtime given equally to all, because the people who have access to listeners through those lists already have an unequal advantage. So I think that to offer only airtime, which is problematic, general managers and program directors have been known to kill that at the last minute by saying, no, we're in a fund drive, we can't afford it, we don't want to do that, you have to go on at 2 in the morning. This does not work out. So to make people sign a pledge, not knowing whether or not it will be executed by the management of their various stations, I think would be cruel and not very fair.
Question, Carolyn?
Yes.
If I'm understanding you correctly, you're speaking in opposition to both of the original drafts and to Bob's proposal.
Yes, I'm afraid I am. I don't see any way to make this equitable.
Okay.
I think that the list, the other problem, of course, is almost legal, but it's also ethical. I think that members have to be able to reach other members as best they can. If someone decides to keep them off the air, all the laws in the world are not going to give them access to the air, and the mail list is all they have.
Point of privilege.
Sirian for the stack.
Terry, Sirian. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the secretary has exercised his mind-reading abilities and come up with a language that he thinks articulates the members' intent, and would like Mr. Letter to see if this language is appropriate for his substitute. Resolved, whereas Pacifica's provision to each delegate of a 500-word statement in a ballot pamphlet constitutes a reasonable alternative to the candidate's purpose of promoting their candidacy to the membership. Resolved, that portions of the Pacifica membership list shall not be made available to candidates in Pacifica delegate elections except under court order or specific advice of counsel.
Well, that's sort of close, but not quite. Can we keep talking about this, and then I'm working on some language while we're talking, and I think I'm
okay.
Close to coming. But thank you, Terry, for the attempt. It's in the right ballpark.
Okay. Serene was after me.
Serene?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just want to make sure that everyone is both clear and being clear when they talk about access to the air during the election season. Staff are the only people who are allowed to be on air. Listener candidates are not allowed to be on air except within the context of an organized forum, an LES or NES-endorsed forum. So when we're talking about equal access to the air, we're certainly not talking about candidates. So I think, you know, listener candidates, I think that needs to be clear. I think generally it would be helpful if members would refrain from casting aspersions. There was a healthy dose in the previous presentation about other people's conduct and intent and charges that, you know, this was done and that was illegal and so on and so forth. We know, and, you know, it's we know that there is someone with access to many email addresses, which members themselves have stepped forward to say they never gave to this person and never authorized the use of beyond official station mailings. So I think, you know, someone should look into that, but I don't think that the best way to handle this to get on air and, you know, say, or get on this call, which has, for some people, the imprimatur of officialdom, and profess that we know things that, that clearly are not known. If there is any truth to the kinds of things that were suggested, then there's a forum for presenting that, and certainly beginning with the committee, if an executive session need be, with the NES and so on and so forth, rather than, you know, simply throwing mud in the belief that some of it will finally stick. So I think that's not a productive way to operate, and I would ask that people try to, how shall I say, behave or operate under the higher nature. That's one. And two, I do not have internet access right now, but I know last year in this committee I brought a motion about the use of money. And members who were on the committee then and some of whom are on the committee and on this call now actually said, you know, it's a really great idea and we really don't want to use money. So I'm surprised there's now resistance by some of those same people to actually coming up with a formula for not using money in the elections. But if someone does have access to the internet, it was posted to the list, and maybe they can dig it out and circulate it. It might be of some use in whatever Bob is phrasing right now. Thank you.
Yeah, Carolyn here. I think the motion with regard to the use of money on the list, I don't recall that, but I think that there was the initial impetus for forming this committee was the charge that individuals were funding mailings. And I think that that was dispensed with or disposed of when we talked about that. It turned out that, in fact, my proposal was not taken up, and that is that anybody doing a mailing to the listeners or to the listener members be required to state the source of the funding. And that would be either name the names or list the number of donors, at least in the amounts donated, if people wanted to remain anonymous. But that was never taken up, and I think that that might solve the objections that some people have to using mailing lists. If we could list that, I think, as I pointed out, the ACE mailing that went out last year claimed to have about 250 individual subscribers to that, funding it. And I think listing those names, or at least the amounts given, and having some independent authority examine those lists of that mailing, Justice and Unley mailing, any other Slate or organization, and any other station putting out a mailing, asking people to provide the source of their funding. That might go a long way towards easing listeners' problems. I think that the charge, evidently that was directed at something that I had said, that the access, people had access to lists. If we want to go into that, we certainly can do that. I don't think we need an executive session, but we could certainly go into that if that's worthwhile, which may not be right now. But I'm certainly happy to do that.
This is Bob.
Carolyn, this is Casey. I would just like to note that... Mm-hmm. Independent candidates are put at a distinct disadvantage vis-a-vis slates when it comes to the question
true.
Of direct mail.
Yes, that is true. That is true. And do you think that the offering of blogs and airtime, which is not really guaranteed, would address that issue sufficiently?
Well, yeah, you're talking about guaranteeing airtime. It is always a struggle, especially when the election coincides with the fall fund drive, and so broadcast time is very tight anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, we don't have the blogs up yet, but we should have them started this week, I'm hoping, and we'll see how popular those are among the candidates and how many listeners actually look at them. That's a matter for speculation right now.
Jackson.
Yes, please.
Actually, I thought I heard a voice before mine.
This is Bob.
Bob, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay. I know there have been problems in the past as far as the amount of airtime given to the on-air debates, and in fact, the PNB addressed that last year and mandated an absolute amount of time that should be given to both the candidate debates and the cards being played. And I have never heard any reports that was not adhered to. But in any case, the solution, even if it wasn't 100% adhered to, the solution is to have tighter policies to make sure it is adhered to. I mean, you don't assume that policies will fail and therefore we have to have a different policy on the assumption that managers are not going to do what they've been directed to do. I think we have to work to make sure that those policies are practical and then carry them out. So that's on that point. And as far as the claims about, people using phone lists and so on, I mean, none of those claims have ever been brought forward in a way that can be verified that any of those phone calls come from the list of the station. I mean, there's lots of people who have lots of phone numbers from lots of political organizing going on around the country. And, it's not surprising that people would pull the list that they have from people who are of a general mind to support the kind of progressive views that are heard on a Pacifica station. So that's evidence of nothing, that people have gotten phone calls. So I think we need to deal in demonstrated and substantiated facts and not in just loose allegations. The main point I want to reemphasize is that this current system that we have with the 500-word statements, you can say a lot in 500 words. And between that and all the other, the on-air provisions that are made, there's your access right there that is equal, and it doesn't need to be supplemented by something else that only some people can afford. And the option that was mentioned earlier of, well, let's have them disclose who gave the money or how many people gave the money, to me, that does nothing to solve the problem. The problem is not that people don't know who raised the money. The problem is that somebody raised the money. It could be 1,000 people chipping in, $3 a piece. That doesn't make it any less imbalanced. It still means that person or group of people had access to those 1,000 people, had the ability to tap them for money, and therefore was able to marshal those funds in a way that disadvantaged every other candidate that didn't have access to that network of people or whatever. So it's completely irrelevant who gave the money, how much they gave, whether it was one person who gave the entire amount or whether it's, hundreds of people. It's the fact that the money is allowed to be spent to get access to, based on access that only Pacifica Foundation can grant or not grant to a mailing list. And that's the fundamental unfairness. And I thought this is what we're supposed to be against. I mean, we have programs all the time that expose the corruption of the governmental election system that's based on private financing. So it seems like we need to be consistent with our own professed values.
Karen?
Karen's back.
Karen, are you there?
I am. I think the blocks are fine, and it's another avenue, and I thank Casey for being willing to make sure that gets into place. But while there are people who, I think we should be honest and recognize that even that represents quite a skew. I talk to listeners all the time who do not have regular access to the internet, where they may go to a library and sign up and wait for their 30 minutes. And not everyone has the kind of lifestyle that allows them hours and hours to create lengthy posts that they've been sent all over the place, or a computer that they own, or a telephone connection in their home to utilize. So I would hope that at least at Pacifica It's not a matter of buying the election. It's not a matter of whether or not you can afford, you know, four-color mailers that appear to be official, that resemble things that come from the station, and so on and so forth, which, you know, it's questionable, I think, ethically, but, you know, people do it. People have done it. I think it should not be a question of whether or not you can afford to buy a seat on the board. It should be a question of ideas. It should be a question of your ideas and your experience and your history. And that is what should be presented to the voters. And it should be presented in such a way that someone who perhaps is on a fixed income, whether it comes from SSI or, you know, from some other program, but they have limited funds, can still, quote, compete as actively and as fully as someone who's, you know, a billionaire and can pretty much float all over the country and pump their stuff. So we should be looking at sort of level playing field within Pacifica. If not here, where?
Anyone else on the stack?
Terry.
Terry, go.
First, on a personal note, when I volunteered to be secretary, I forgot that I have to go to work for the next, like, hour. I'd like to know if Henry could write down the text of any resolutions during that period. I'll call in on my cell and listen in while I work.
Sure, I can do that.
And I have this language in response to one of the comments of listeners about not having a direct mention of the mailing list. I have another suggestion amendment to Mr. Knorr's language. In between, either individually or as part of a slate, and the second paragraph, I make this pledge because I suggest adding the language if we adopt either, you know, if we adopt any pledge idea. Specifically, I pledge not to exercise my right as a member to obtain independent access to any portion of the Pacifica membership list for purposes of promoting my election campaign.
Okay, is there any penalty you're suggesting for people who, in fact, do not sign that pledge and break it, or do not sign the pledge?
No, I don't know how we can enforce a voluntary pledge.
Okay. Yes, I'm
going to hang up and call back in by cell.
Wait, Terry, quickly before you do that,
yeah.
Is that language, can you put that online, or?
Want me to send it to the list, or to you, or?
Either way.
Well, I'll send it. Yeah, I'll send a revised.
If it's a hassle, don't worry about it. I just didn't get it all, but whatever.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna put myself on the stack, if I may. The problem is, individuals can pledge not to send more than $100. They can pledge not to ask their friends to. But if, in fact, if they're members of organizations, which is largely the problem, and their organizations go ahead and put out mailings on their behalf, naming them under letterhead, that is the kind of access that other members do not have, and that they will be constrained from having. They will have no access to the membership of WBAI, and these other organizations, which do have access, will put out large mailings on behalf of their members who happen to be candidates. This is what happened last time, and I think that this is a real issue. There's no way we can stop that.
Let me ask you for clarification, Carolyn. Are you talking organizations that are unrelated but may have overlapping membership?
Well, they may have overlapping membership. They have large interest populations, and the people that they are on the board belong to those and probably got in on the basis of those overlapping memberships voting for them. And so to have those people say, or even currently seated members say, I will refrain from having my organization support anyone currently running, that's an impossible situation. I don't see that we can ask that. No one would certainly agree to do that, but I can see that that would be the problem. So independent candidates with no access, no organization behind them are running. They've signed the pledge. They're not spending more than $100. Nobody is advocating for them. They can't access the membership. And candidate B has a membership organization of 2,000 members that is putting out a membership saying, by the way, we support candidate B. So there's no way to equalize that and to handicap members with little access to begin with and say all you get is 500 words and the equivalent of 7 minutes on the air. I don't think that really is fair. So, I'm advocating for no pledge. I don't see how we can make a pledge equitable.
But candidate A get more equal access under the current system or whatever you wanted to propose?
More than what? Than whom?
Well, you're saying candidate A is independent and doesn't have resources, membership, and mass-based
mm-hmm.
organizations, et cetera. And candidate B has the advantage of being supported by an outside organization with overlapping membership
mm-hmm.
radio stations. So how does candidate A, under that circumstance, get more equal access?
Well, one way is to join a slate, and I'm afraid slates are rather inevitable. But one way is certainly not to restrict him from accessing membership, either with his own funds or by joining a slate. I think asking him to tie his hands and feet deliberately is not going to result in equitable access to the members. Candidate B will have everything he has, plus this large list behind him or her.
Well, Carol, I just have to ask you, you wanted to convene this campaign finance subcommittee, and what is it you would propose to other than our current system of people with money being able to buy access to the mailing list? What would you propose to equalize the or level the playing field?
Well, actually, I didn't propose this committee. It was Bob Lederer's proposition. And then he declined to convene it, so I took it on because nobody else was offering to convene it. But it was
okay.
Bob's proposal. I think my original proposal was not to restrict people, but to offer people.
Offer people.
Hello? But to offer people the a paid-for mailing. My original suggestion was that every candidate should have a minimum access, paid for by the staff, perhaps, or by the foundation. I suggested 1 8.5 by 11 two-sided mailing to be included in the mass mailing to all the members by every candidate. Perhaps every candidate could contribute $50 as a token towards the mailing fee, because the mailing would be very expensive, especially if there were 15 or 20 candidates in any station. But at least that would guarantee that every candidate would have access to the membership by at least one piece of paper. Beyond that, I don't know how we can equalize it without penalizing people who are violating the bylaws or the First Amendment, frankly.
Stop.
Bob?
Okay. Well, and by the way, the only reason I declined to convene this meeting was just because at that particular time I was really jammed up with other responsibilities. But
exactly.
I'd be happy
yeah.
to take it over if you would like, because I think this is a crucial issue for Pacifica to tackle. And the problem with the idea of having that kind of mailing that money is raised some other way is that. Pacifica is in very bad straits financially. So there is no kind of extra little pocket of money we can dig up in the budget to fund an additional mailing. That's point one. As far as throwing it onto the candidates, that absolutely introduces something fundamentally opposite to our values as a foundation, which is that only those candidates who can afford the $50 or whatever the amount would be eligible to participate in that, and we that to me is intolerable. So it can't be based on donations from the candidates themselves. Whether they're equal or not is irrelevant. It's that they would be required to pay money to run for the board, which is just, it's like a poll tax. It's totally unacceptable. So given our our tight finances, which will go on I'm sure for quite some time, and given the fact that we already I still don't understand what is the problem with a 500-word statement and, you know, on-air time, yes, it's somewhat limited, but you can say a lot in 500 words. And to me, that's all, and it's totally equal. And there's never been any question that that's been adhered to rigidly by every election supervisor. So to me, that's enough. And I just think we need to say between that and the airtime that's offered and the community forums, it's enough. And anything else just is way too imbalancing. So I don't want to repeat myself. At this point, I have worked up some wording, and I'll send it right now to the committee.
Oh, good. Thank you.
How many of you are online. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be glad to read it out loud for the listeners as well.
Thank you.
And this is just a rough draft, and I'm totally open to any, you know, wording changes or even conceptual changes.
Mm-hmm. So let me add this to the list of information that is made available to the voters by the candidates. And that is, we have a much more elaborate questionnaire this year than we've had in previous.
Oh, right. Yes, I'm sorry.
And we're allowing each candidate to write up to 300 words in response to each of the 20 questions. These questionnaires will not be listed per candidate. Instead, they'll be listed per question. That is, you go to the particular question, and you'll be able to directly compare each candidate's response. Of course, they'll be grouped by radio station, but even so, I think that this will hopefully raise the dialogue somewhat on some of the more specific issues that the boards have to deal with.
All right, thank you. That sounds generous. Is that 20 questions times 300 words each?
That's correct.
Oh, that's a lot of words. But again,
I expect that not everybody will answer every question, and they won't always use that many words, but. At least it gives people a chance to elaborate some on some of the specifics that they'll face as board members.
Right.
Henry on the stack, please.
Henry, go ahead, please.
Two points. One is that, I guess in response to you, Carolyn, to this whole discussion, really, a mailing, as long as we are voting by mail on paper, that means that a mailing that candidates send out is, to my mind, vastly more powerful than any on-air time. For one thing, it can go to any and all candidates, whereas only a minority are going to hear online time, and probably a minority are going to bother to look at the website. So much as I appreciate Casey's efforts. So, you know, if we were voting online, then online access, you know, might be a good answer. But if people are holding in their hand a piece of mail that says, you know, these 25 well-known activists endorse these 7 candidates or whatever, and people get that at the same time that they get the paper ballot, then that's just way more powerful piece of propaganda, and an advantage that the people who could afford that have. So that's my my fundamental the reason why I think even with all the online access that I would like to within the limits of the law, that I would like to have a limit on spending for mailing. I had another point I was going to make, but I've forgotten, so I'll pass.
Well, in response to that, if I may, I think that perhaps it would be logical to say that any candidate who is not doing an individual mailing would have access to a group mailing underwritten by the foundation. I realize we have to submit this, of course, for financial impact statement from the board, I guess, but it seems to me that would be the only way to equalize the power of the post. Even last year when we were considering very briefly the possibility of how the foundation could transfer to electronic voting at some point, we had talked with electronic voting services, the organization that we contacted in order to administer the elections, and they had done this with Sierra Club and a few other organizations, and it takes about 3 years to get almost everyone online, and there are still a number of people who will never be online. So we have to always remember that, number one, it's a radio station, and number two, some people, a large proportion of people, there is a digital divide. They will simply not be online.